now to your regularly scheduled program.
Hey everybody, this is Josh Martin.
And I'm Marty Hyde.
Hey, how you doing?
Welcome to the Tattoos and Jesus Podcast.
I am very happy to be here!
Here at TNJ, we seek to blend the righteous with the ridiculous.
Please explain.
We discuss coffee, counseling, Christianity, and whatever else crosses our mind.
We hope you enjoy it.
Okay, let's go.
Welcome back everybody to another episode, Tattoos and Jesus. Here's your host, John Hite, and what's your name?
So, you went with John Hite today because everybody gave you grief last week about not knowing that Marty
you
was your actual
UPS,
name.
If you work for UPS, I need you to know all of my names.
You need to know all of your names. You need to realize that.
That's fair.
You could just say, hey, yeah, I do have a name, and it's the one I usually go by 99% of my life. So
Josh Martin.
Yeah. And like
Joshua.
That's Martin. What I'm saying. Like, if somebody were to be like, I don't have a Joshua, but do you go by something else? I'd be like, I don't know, man. Like, I don't.
Josh?
Couldn't tell you. Couldn't tell you.
What's your middle name? What is it again?
Michael.
Michael, that's right. Because you misspelled it on your application last week.
Mike. Well, I was just typing fast.
Typing fast.
And I had the wrong years because I still put 2023.
Listen, I had the craziest thing happen the other night. I thought I was going to end up in like the emergency room and no one in my family cared about me. My wife literally rolled over, told me to stop making noise and went to sleep.
That's what I'm talking about.
And I'm like, seriously, I'm in a medical crisis.
But aren't you kind of a hypochondriac?
This is not a hypochondriac. This was a very serious situation. Let me tell you, let me paint the picture in my overly dramatic fashion here. It's before bed. And I'm like trimming my beard, right? Like I have a beard trimmer out and I'm like, trimming your mustache or whatever. So this is the craziest thing. This was so insane. So I'm trimming my mustache. And so there's, the little hairs that fall into the sink or whatever. Somehow in like trimming my mustache with the mustache trimmer, one of the little hairs shot up and I felt it hit me in the eye. One of the little beard hairs, like a millimeter long. And it hits it. I was like, oh, what's the chances of that happening? That hurt. And then I kind of blink and it like goes away. And I'm like, all right, I'm fine. So I finish shaping everything up. And I go to bed. So I'm laying there just like scrolling on my phone, getting ready to go to sleep. Ashley's like, I'm going to sleep. She rolls over. But like then it gets to this point where when I blink, I feel something scratching like the inside of my eye. Right? It's the inside of my left eye, like right in the corner. It feels like it's scratching. And I'm like, that stupid beard hair is still in there. So I'm sitting up and I'm like, flapping my eyelid and like blinking and just trying to get it to pop out. And I'm like, man, this hurts. And so I'm like, I'm just going to have to get up and go like, look, this stupid hair. I do not know how this happened. So I go in the mirror. I open my eye and I like pull my eyelid up. It is stuck into the membrane of my eyelid, like that, like wet, like part inside. It's not my eyeball.
Thank you for showing me on the body, like I'm pulling your eyelid up so that.
But it's like the membraney part that's on the inside of your eyelid.
Yeah,
that's not your eyeball though. It's right next.
Right.
It has pierced it. It's not just laying in there.
Pierced seems like a bit of dramatic response.
Like a splinter. It's like stuck in it. And so it's sticking out. And so when I blink, it scratches down my eyeball. But it's inside in that I can't just reach up there and pull it out. I have to, like, fold my eyelid out and then, like, try to get it. But then, when you're playing with your eye, it starts watering. You start crying. And so, like, you can't get a good grip. So I can see it, and I can even rub it, but it's stuck in there.
Pierced.
It's pierced like pierced. A splinter. It's like a splinter.
Like an earring.
Like how strong are my beard hairs that when they are small, they can penetrate flesh. And so I can't get it out, but I know it has to come out. Like I can't just like go to sleep with this thing. And so I go in. I was like, Ashley. She's like, what? I said, I got a problem. She goes, leave me alone.
That's what I'm talking about.
I was like, man, this is not good. So I'm like looking for tweezers, but I don't really want to use tweezers because you have to shove it in your eye.
Jeez.
And so I'm like, I just keep trying to like hit it with my finger, hoping it will knock it out.
You're probably just pushing it further in.
Right. It's like an impossible scenario. And I'm like, I can't get my fingers in there to like pull it out. I know that it wouldn't be hard. If you could get some on it, I'm sure it would come right out. But just where it's at, the angle it's at, it's just very difficult. So I'm like, man, this is, so I mess with it for like 10 minutes. No progress. And so I go through the whole house looking for tweezers. I'm like, I'm just going to have to try to use tweezers very carefully and pull it out. I can't find tweezers to save my life. Maybe that was the sovereignty of God, because he knew you do not need to put
tweezers.
God knows what germy tweezers.
You're using one eye that's watery to try to get whatever, this small beard hair.
That's correct.
That apparently is sharper than.
So sharp. I actually started making knives out of these after
this. Yeah, I'm sure.
And so anyway, so I go back in the bathroom. I can't find tweezers. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. Like And I mess with it a couple more times and it pops out. It finally popped out on my finger. And as soon as it popped out on my finger, it was like, you know, sometimes it's the little things in life that bring you joy. Like the relief that I felt. Like not because the pain was gone, but because the panic was gone. Because I was like, seriously, I was like, I cannot sleep like this. Like, it has to come out. I was like, I can't drive to the emergency room for this. Like, that's a lot of money. Like, this is, and they would make fun of me. And it would be a 7-second procedure.
Procedure. Yeah.
That's medical language.
Right. Yeah. It's probably more suit.
It was.
More suited on a medical situation as well.
But. I'm just saying, it was sheer panic there for about 15, 20 minutes.
And this has nothing to do with you being a hypochondriac.
There was.
In certain situations.
There was, now, the level of drama in which I worked up about the situation may have been hypochondriac-ish. Because of I was thinking worst case scenario. But no, there was a literal hair that had splintered its way into my membrane and was scratching my eyeball.
How far in your brain did you go as far as worst case? Like, that's what, like, this beard hair is now in your eye. Like, in your mind,
yeah.
Where did you land?
Now, realistically, I figured the worst case scenario, which is actually ER would actually be better than this, is waking my wife back up.
Okay.
And so worst case scenario, I have to wake Ashley back up, wait for her to go through the wrath of God against me, and then say, I'm really sorry. I don't want this as much as you don't want this right now, but I really need your help. And then she's going to compose herself, and then she'll have to use the bathroom, because what she always does when she gets out of bed. And then it would be 3 seconds. I know, I'd pull my eye apart, she'd reach in and pull it out. Because if you had two sets of hands, it wouldn't be that hard, because somebody can hold it. So I'm trying to hold the eye with one hand that's getting like slippery from tears, while then using my other fat finger to try to get this stupid thing out. So anyway, long story short, it came out, but I was nervous. What in the world?
Didn't you also have a situation that happened when shaving your beard that we told on the podcast one time?
What do you mean?
Didn't you accidentally shave something?
Yeah, my mustache.
And you had to, like, do something to fix it? Maybe you personally should just stop in general, or wear sunglasses when you shave from now on, so that it doesn't penetrate your skin.
What was that? I think I forgot to put the guard on, and so it was just the bare razor. I like chunked out my mustache. I just had to like shave my whole mustache really short, so it looked, I don't know, like Abe Lincoln-ish or something. Amish-y.
Abe Lincoln and Amish was,
yeah,
your first,
like,
two thoughts.
The beard, no mustache. The beard, no mustache.
Interesting.
But yeah, that wasn't fun as well.
I'm sure Ashley was thinking.
I'm a survivor, though.
Marty's being a hypochondriac again.
Oh,
therefore.
Yeah, she would not be patient
in
that moment.
She's going to turn back over. One day, you may be telling the truth.
Like, right.
And then she's just going to be like, that's just my.
I am the boy that cried wolf. I understand this. I understand the bed I've made. And I understand that there's a day coming where I'm going to have to lay in it.
That's just. So
I may lay in my own vomit. I may be laying in my. There's no telling.
Good Lord.
Broken arm.
In bed? How did that happen?
You're going to be laying
roll
there.
Roll off.
Oh,
have
you never had a moment like this?
I mean.
What's your best beard hair experience?
Beard hair. I think it's more of just personalities, honestly. Personality types. and how they adjust to certain situations here.
Is that a Segway I smell?
I don't think so. I think that's Starbucks.
Starbucks.
But
also, shout out to Starbucks. Have you ever had their vanilla? You brought me Starbucks today. You're a real gem. Mm. Vanilla sweet cream cold brew. Have you ever had it? Incredibly low calories. Like it's one of the lowest calorie. I think it's the lowest calorie sweet drink they have. Absolutely phenomenal. It is delicious. If you like cold brew and you like sweet things, vanilla.
It's top notch.
I mean, you're only cold brew. The vanilla sweet cream cold brew.
You're not even 100 yards away from Starbucks.
I know. I'm right across the street from one. It's absolutely delicious.
During the spring and summertime,
we have not ranked a coffee in a long time. 8.5.
Wow.
8.5 to 8.7. All day long. Absolutely delicious. Anyway, personalities.
So that's pretty high.
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
Better than the pumpkin spice chai? Probably, maybe. Man. Up there with about the same.
Yes, because once you take into, like, the pumpkin spice chai is high in calories. So it's like, I feel like, man, I got to, like, skip half my dinner now. Whereas this is all the fun, very little sacrifice. Me walking to get it and walking back pretty much burns off the calories it takes for me to drink it.
Okay.
So.
Interesting.
Delicious.
I'll give it a shot.
I mean, it's probably like 100 calories or something, but not a lot.
I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, you really should. It's great. It's my go-to afternoon drink. I don't like hot coffee in the afternoon. Cold brew.
I don't mind it in the summer. I mean, in this winter.
Hot coffee. Oh, yeah. Yeah, if you're cold.
I mean, it's freezing out there. I mean, we're looking at it. We're staring at a two-hour delay right now in the face, Marty. So they're talking about a two-hour delay.
Tomorrow?
Yeah.
Are you serious at school?
There was rumors. But by the time this podcast released, everybody will know if that's true or not. So let me ask you this, because this actually ties in with a conversation that I had earlier today.
Mm-hmm. It's 110 calories.
I don't know why I just said 100. a conversation I had earlier today about, I give away too many details, personalities, how they fit certain situations. You mentioned this probably a few episodes ago. You've mentioned this a few times, how our personality shapes maybe decisions, behaviors, choices. Like we talked about that in the realm of faith, like how our faith beliefs usually will line up with our personality beliefs if it's, you know, debatable on what's what. Mm-hmm. But how that fits into life, like how does somebody's personality fit into some of the more philosophical aspects of life, decisions, choices, beliefs, motives, motivation, like, because we can convince ourselves of a lot of different things. And I think this is one of the beauties of counseling, because this was one of the first, I don't know if you remember this or not, but this is one of the first things you told me.
Ever?
I think. No, just in general about counseling, not ever. I think it was you. Counseling is just holding up a mirror. Isn't that you?
It sounds like something I'd say.
Yeah. Where we're not trying to fix you, but we're trying to help you understand yourself at a greater capacity. And so if you know your flaws and you know your faults and you know how you act, which is why people love personality tests.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. How did this know that this is what I did? And what's the insight on that? And so understanding and being aware of those things, I think, are critical in making healthy and sound decisions.
But you know what I find interesting is there is a huge, I'm going to call it huge. It's probably not huge. It's huge in some very small circles. Kind of debate about, is personality testing biblical? Like the Enneagram.
Oh, the Enneagram.
Myers-Briggs personality test. There's different, I mean, I'm not going to keep going down the list. There's various personality tests. MMPI and the Enneagram are probably the two biggest.
Yeah.
And we've talked about that before. We've talked about personality tests before.
Right.
Long time ago. But there is a lot of people that feel very, very strongly that should not be used in the Christian faith. And so on one hand, you're like, I think this is really important. Mm-hmm. And like, people need to understand themselves. But then you also have a faction of people that are like, that is not biblical. Where do you think that comes from?
That divide?
Yeah. Like, why do you think? Because I had never did it cross my mind, like, could this be contrary to the faith? Until people started, like, talking about it and were like, this is bad. And I'm like, what? Why?
First initial thought is there's a lot, and we've talked about this before, so it's not going to be anything crazy, but people put a lot of weight into biblical interpretation. We've talked about that before, mm-hmm. where if this says this, it's 100% true all across the board.
Yeah.
So if this verse tells me I'm this, then I apply it and call it truth, whereas maybe a personality type tells me I'm this.
Gotcha.
And I think that probably creates somewhat of a divide in understanding that maybe this verse is talking about a specific group of people or a mm-hmm. situation that's not necessarily applied to ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that the personality type is just being aware. I don't really know how you get there.
Well, one of the things that I read,
a lot of the personality type
is
stuff,
like with the Enneagram, like some of the people talk about how it was created, how it was initially used, and there's some, I think there's some concern or some division about like maybe its origins not being from the best place. I don't know. I don't really go down that rabbit hole too far, but the more practical concern, which I'm going to say this, I actually understand it, was that when people take those tests, which are man-made, made up, I mean, they're based on research, but research all the time proves itself wrong, right? Because we know as much, we think we know as much as we do right now, but 20 years ago, 20 years from now, we'll know more. You know, and so they're like, this is just a modern understanding of personality, which people then will attach to and feel like it's a box they're forced to live in. Mm-hmm. Not because they have to, but because they'll take ownership of, oh, I'm this. So this is who I am.
Yeah.
And basically, in some ways, create limits to how they will allow God to use them. Because they're like, well, that's not my personality type. I don't have to do this. I can't do this. Or, right? And so they're basically like, whoa. God can do anything in anyone. And so I would hate for something that's just it's researched, it's scientific, but not, I mean, it's not like the gospel truth. Mm-hmm. To all of a sudden create this, I guess, paradox or this belief system that then somehow impairs their ability to allow God to use them in certain settings. Or to stretch them beyond their capacity, or to cultivate something that's not natural in their personality. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And so I get that. Like in all ways, we have to realize like these things can inform who we are, but they don't necessarily need to define who we are.
Right. They're an awareness tool, in a way. Like we're aware. So I guess this is my ADD moments. There's three things that's popped up in my head. First is, you brought up a good point in like understanding the divide between the two, but I would bring both of those forth and see what you're working with. Like, yeah. See, like, all right, what is this saying? What is this saying? Why do they differ? Is there something maybe unhealthy in my life that's making this aspect determine certain things? Is there something unhealthy? Like, weigh it all out. But it kind of made me think, like, to you, if somebody were to say personality, we always go Myers-Briggs, Enneagram is common, like you said.
Yeah.
In like a more counseling aspect, personality is what?
Like, what is personality like?
Yeah, like to you, what like for me, personality is like a pattern or like a consistent reaction
mm-hmm.
to situations or people or relationships. Like, personality is more of like,
that's a really good question. Like, it's like let's go a step below and say, what is personality?
Yeah, because if you say it, then most people say, oh, I'm a nine. And I'm like, okay, all right, well, let's calm down there.
All right, so before, I have a definition here, but this is, before I read it, if you're to ask me, like, what is personality?
Yeah.
I would say it is the collection of attitude, beliefs, and behaviors. And attitudes will include, like, mood. Attitudes, beliefs, and behaviors that in their sum consistently represent who you are to the world around you.
Gotcha.
Is that?
Yeah.
Hold on. Here's what Google Dictionary, Oxford, what is it? I don't know what.
Dictionary.
The combination of characteristics or qualities that form an individual's distinctive character.
So
We were all, I mean, we all danced around that.
Yeah. That,
combination of characteristics and qualities that form an individual's distinctive behavior. So,
kind of the needle through it all is like consistency.
Yeah.
What are you consistently thinking, feeling?
It's who you are that other people can see.
Right.
And that involves various aspects.
Right.
I mean, we could use all kinds of descriptive terms.
Which is what the personality test does.
Yeah.
In this situation, you choose this. And so consistently, you think this way and feel this way and act this way.
And so that's where, okay, here's what I think's funny. A spiritual gifts test is no freaking different.
It's the same thing, yeah.
Because, again, it's not meant to tell you who you are. Mm-hmm. It's meant to expose what is there, but maybe you haven't connected the dots.
Right.
It's just to help you connect the dots, mm-hmm. right? Like, if you are an introvert and you need some alone time to recharge your batteries, whether or not a test told you that does not change the fact that you're an introvert and need to recharge your batteries with alone time.
Right.
All it does is inform you of that. Like you said, hold up the mirror.
Right.
So that now you can then be more informed to help you understand, why am I feeling so empty right now? Or why am I feeling so drained right now? And then you realize, I've been around people for the last 48 hours. I maybe need some alone time. Well, the freaking spiritual gifts test is no different, mm-hmm. right? That's a man-made test based on biblical principles. Even spiritual gifts are just a collective set of opinions that they believe Scripture points to as unique gifts empowered by the Holy Spirit in believers' lives.
Right.
Right? But there's no, like, 100% set list.
Right.
Because there's different spiritual gift tests that list different spiritual gifts.
Right.
But it's just,
yeah.
Most facets of Christianity believe in,
the
giftings of the Spirit. It's just, they don't all, anyway. And that's all it does, is all it does is ask you questions that, based on how you interact with those questions, suggest that you as a person, your personality, puts greater emphasis and passion in some areas and tends to not feel as connected or empowered by other areas.
Right.
It's the same thing.
Yep.
It's just, one is the mirror to maybe your personality, and one is maybe a mirror to how your spiritual personality presents,
mm-hmm.
which is no different than if you've ever looked at Strong's inventory, Strong like strongman, Strong's mm-hmm. inventory, which is a career test. Mm-hmm. Same thing. It's in the same way that a personality test looks at your personality, or a spiritual one looks at your spiritual gifts. Strong's inventory looks at, how does your personality most likely live out in the work setting? And it helps you kind of know, this type of work settings will help me thrive, and these other types of work settings may not be as fulfilling.
Yeah. And I think they all, you may disagree with this, maybe. I don't know.
Oh, yes.
Might have something.
I'm going to go ahead and disagree.
Or you could just be devil's advocate, either one. But I think they're all the same. Like, personality tests, spiritual gifts tests, career tests. Like, I don't think one is going to be so opposite of another. Yep. Like, they're all going to be similar to each other in their answers, in what they're pointing to, in what they're suggesting. Like, yep. even in the Bible.
Like, if you laid all three together, they are all going to complement each other.
Right. It's not going to be like,
you're not going to be an introvert as a Christian and an extrovert as a career.
Right.
Like, you're going to be introverted in all facets of your life. How's that? You know, you're going to be extroverted in all facets. You're going to be a people pleaser in all facets. Like, how does that play out in those facets? No, I agree with that.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, you're not going to just randomly, like, I think about, like, I go straight to the disciples and I'm thinking, well, Peter was the leader, but he was the leader. And you look at his background because he was the oldest, because he was the most mature, because he was, and then you look at John, who was the youngest, who wouldn't even identify himself in the gospel, who would not even, that he was very meek and humble. Like, it fit. Like, it's not like this random, like, oh,
it's not artificial judgment.
Right.
It's just saying he fits the trend.
He fits what he should fit. Like, he fits what makes sense.
I'm going to take it a step further. This is a bit controversial. Okay. Maybe you'll disagree with me. I think that spiritual gifts, even before your faith matters to you, I can almost predict what your spiritual gifts will be. Because I think spiritual gifts are God's redemptive work on your natural gifts.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I feel like I have to add an asterisk for all the people that may balk at that and say, there are times that God radically changes lives. Mm-hmm. And it feels like a person has been completely made over. Mm-hmm. And that they are radically different. And you're like, you never in many years would have seen this from that.
Mm-hmm.
However, the vast majority of people that once they have had a spiritual revelation or a conversion in their lives are just a Christian version of who they used to be. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I agree with that.
Like,
unfortunately, I agree with that. Yeah. I can't debate it, but
they're just, and you can try to say no and be like, nope, my, you know, and I hear people be like, no, if you went back and asked my classmates, they would have never predicted that I would have been here doing this. Yeah, they may not have predicted your profession, but the skill set you use was probably present then. God usually doesn't create a new skill set in your life. He creates a new heart from which your skill set presents, and that there's a unique set of gifts that are especially connected to spiritual matters that then are more amplified, whereas you didn't put any focus. They were dormant, right? They were just non-present before your faith mattered to you.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
It can be, yeah. Like it's definitely, I mean, you hear that a lot, which it could be controversial. You could say, oh, I'm a completely different person than what I was.
Yep.
And like you mentioned, and like you pointed out, the heart of that is probably where you're talking about. Not necessarily more of like, you still have thinking patterns that are probably the same. You still have, mm-hmm. you know, skill sets that are similar. Like, you don't just lose being critical or lose being good with numbers or lose being good with
right.
people or, I'm co-signing on that.
You know, and I don't know, like, if you meet someone who has the spiritual gift of evangelism and they go out and they are trying to enter into these gospel-centered conversations intentionally, on purpose, selling people on their belief in the gospel, like, and you took them before Christ, there's a good chance that they were passionately persuasive about other things in their life, if that makes sense. They were maybe a salesman or like those qualities were already simmering there. Now they're just a more like Christian version, sanctified characteristics.
All right. Go ahead. What were you about to say? I got a good one.
You got a good one? Okay, so here's my question. See if this is similar. Then if all of these things are kind of cemented in who we are, right? That we're not creating personalities, we're just revealing personalities in all these facets, then how do people change? Can people change? Like, because we have so many people that have polar opposite beliefs, and we always are arguing, trying to get people on this set of bandwagons and that set of bandwagons, believing that truth is what creates the divide and that misinformed people live misinformed, and it's my job to give them the truth, and that will bring them to my side. But then you still see debates in which people cannot get on the same page, even though they agree on the truth. The positions still vary. And so that's where I've been thinking, and that's where I think some of our previous conversations are, is why do people agree on the same thing but still have different positions, like in politics and in other areas? So that's where my mind was going. What was the question you were?
Similar? It was like mine was going to be you bird eye viewed kind of a more specific thing that I was going to mention, which I'm right there with you. Like, change. How do you change some of these things? Mm-hmm. My mind kind of went to, you know, I read where, I looked it up a little bit today as far as like personality, and there's kind of like this debate between, hold up. It says, as social creatures, oftentimes contacts rather than personality plays a bigger role than in our decisions. So environment versus personality.
What's it saying?
It's saying that environment plays more of a bigger role than personality. But
in
I don't
what?
Know if I agree with that. In just decision making.
I don't agree with that.
You know, I don't
agree with that.
It depends. Because it goes back to like personality.
It's
are
a nature
you conflict
nurture thing.
Avoidant? Like if you are, then you'll just agree to whatever's going on.
The nature nurture debate usually lands at 50-50. It's 50% environment, 50% nature, genetics, right? Half is who you are, half is the world you were raised in.
Mm-hmm.
I can't back off of that. However, the longer I live and the more I see, I almost start to feel like we are more predisposed to who we are than our environment really makes that much of a difference. It is influential, yes, but far less influential than I wish it was. Or maybe that's a good thing. I don't know.
And I think it depends, like, as you, even as you say that, like, it depends on what do you want? Like, as a person, when you make a decision, what is your goal?
Yeah.
Like, is your goal to be your truest self? Is your goal to accomplish a goal that you're setting? Is your goal an emotion or a motive that, you know, it just became new? Or is your goal to feel accepted? Is your goal to build a new community? Is your goal?
Like, and all of that's a lot determined by personality.
Right. And you may contradict yourself
yeah.
to get whatever you're after. You may say, because you see it a lot, and I'm just being a little open right now. I did it a lot growing up, or I did it a lot even now, where it's like, I do it less now, and it's a lot more freeing. But, like, there's still times in my life where I'm choosing to have acceptance or relationships or community, which I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but that's what I'm choosing over who I might actually want to be, who I actually am, or what I actually believe.
That's a good point. What matters most to you? Relationships, feeling like you're telling the truth, like all of these. So here's what's crazy, and where some of my beliefs have shaped about genetics is there's a couple different examples. Like, one is if you do research on people that grow up in low socioeconomic status circumstances, poverty, the ghetto, rural settings that there's no resources, like, you know, and we like to say everybody gets a fair shake, right? Everyone goes to school. Everyone can go to school. Everyone can go to college if they want to. Maybe not the same colleges, but like community college is free right now. Like, you could go to college. And so, but when they look at people that are wealthy, by and large, there's some exceptions, but by and large, they then have children that also attain higher levels of education and continue to be very successful, not just riding the coattails of their successful parents, but continue to be successful. And people that are middle class tend to produce children that are also middle class. And lower class people tend to produce people that continue to replicate that, even though, because you could make the argument, well, upper class, yeah, because that's good. It's enjoyable, right? Makes life pleasurable. Of course they want to go and continue that. But, like, why does somebody want to continue living in poverty or in neglect instead of chasing after something better, right? And we like to use the term, you got to pull yourself up by your bootstraps, right? You got to take ownership of your life, and you need to work hard. And yet, despite all of that, statistically, very few people rise above their circumstances significantly. And they're outliers, right? And oftentimes, it may be through athletics. It may be through occasionally through academics or just hard work. But those tend to be the outliers, not the rule. The rule says you're going to continue the path that you were created. And so then it's like, well, why? Why? What? Right. And there's like a million different variables that impact that. Right. So, like, if you live in poverty, there's tons of research about the layers. It's compounding. Right. The problem's compounding. It's not as easy as just go get an education and be successful. Like, there are additional barriers that middle class doesn't have. Right. And the middle class has additional barriers that the wealthy doesn't have. So there's external variables. There's the practical variable of, even if you had the desire and the passion, you may have other circumstances that prevent you from being able to fully engage in those opportunities. I get all that. But what a lot of it comes down to is personality. And I think if you were to kind of map it out, and I'm painting with a broad brush, because everybody's going to probably think of somebody that doesn't meet this, is people that struggle have common personality qualities in their life, right? Mm-hmm. Not all of them. Right. I'm not talking about racial indifferences. I'm not talking about maybe they're immigrants and they're facing other barriers. But oftentimes, like, if I go into the town where I live and I go to the Mill Hill, or if I go to some places that are notorious for these families are struggling, what you find is that there tends to be similar personality qualities. Well, guess what kind of children they have? Kids with the same personality. And so even though they may be presented with opportunities to pursue because that life has been normalized, that's their standard they're comfortable with, and they tend to act genetically how they're predisposed to act, and then environmentally, it fits with their personality because the people around them share their genetics. Mm-hmm. And so most of them end up conforming to that environment, right? Just like people that are kind of middle of the road, right? Their personality may predispose them to work hard, make a good living, but be content, right? And that mediocre is fine. And wealthy people tend to have a more entrepreneurial spirit. They tend to have this really strong hustle in them that's like work, 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 right? And so like, even if that person would have been raised in a different family, those personality qualities would probably expose themselves and set them apart, right? And you also see this in studies in adoption, where you have a child that may have been adopted at birth, and once they become 10, 15, 20 years old, you start to be like, who is this child? And you realize they start to emulate the same behaviors as their parents that they've never met, right? You often see these stories, and because the genetics are so powerful, you know, I see even in just emotional expression, you know, I hear stories and I've done some research and seen things firsthand where you have somebody in front of you that is demonstrating the exact same emotional patterns as their biological parents who they've never met. The exact same sensitivities, the exact same work ethic, even though they have never met this person and they were raised in a family that demonstrated a completely different way of life. It's almost like they were so genetically predisposed that even though their whole world looked different, they still became where they came from. It, in their DNA, it defined them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's wild.
That's the end.
That's wild.
That's wild.
Right, because it almost feels like you're trapped in your genes.
So you're bringing up a lot of good stuff because my mind is on a good rut right here. It's on a good pathway.
You got a rut going?
It's a good pathway. Okay. Because, and this is more of just an open conversation, probably with you, but I've been trying to, just in switching personally in who you're counseling with, just in that aspect, you get a lot of different people come through the door. Well, you know, you get a certain type that come through drug and alcohol. Mm-hmm. You get a certain type that come through private practice, and you get a certain type that come through different healthcare systems.
Yes.
And it's like, okay, the approach to each one of those seem to be a little bit different.
Yeah.
And as you're talking, it's like, I can see a few of the kids I meet with now, and I've noticed how in session, there's two things that I've really wanted to hit home. Because before, I would usually rely a lot on outside influences to help. Outside relationships, coping skills, things like that. In certain situations, that can't happen. You know, there's not, their families are either not there or not the greatest, or they ain't got a lot going for them right now, which is what you just described. And I'm starting to notice that I'm done trying to work that out, and I'm more trying to instill resiliency, I guess is the best word. There's a resiliency that you have to develop and grow in, and there's a reality that they have to kind of come to and say what you just described.
Yeah.
I'm not in the same position other people are. I have to work harder. I have to develop a greater resiliency to life because of the situation I'm in. It is unfair, but I'm not going to survive unless these things are instilled into me. Mm-hmm. And so
that's what's crazy is resiliency is a really good word, because when you look at situations, oftentimes I think it does come down to resiliency, but there's two types of resiliency. There's the resiliency that leads to success when they're like, I am resilient despite failure. Mm-hmm. I'm resilient despite setbacks. I'm resilient despite the time it takes to accomplish the goal, and I will not be held back. It's like the whole Rocky quote where you're like, you get hit, but you got to keep going, mm-hmm. right? And like there's a resiliency to push forward, mm-hmm. right? You got to think, people that have grown up in tough times also have resiliency, mm-hmm. but it's a resiliency to continue to endure despite the struggle. Mm-hmm. But the resiliency doesn't lead to the desire to overcome the struggle, mm. right? It creates calluses, emotional calluses that allow them to survive and maybe even thrive in that environment. But it doesn't catapult them to the next level of pursuit.
So like a helplessness aspect.
Yeah, it's almost like a learned helplessness. They're like trapped. They're like, right, it's like there's this belief that this is my lot in life.
Right.
And so
there's no motivation there to change that.
Yeah.
How, as a counselor, because mm-hmm. I can see it.
How do you change
even
it?
As a person, even by yeah. listening, how do you help mm-hmm. instill that in somebody else in general or as a counselor?
Okay. A couple things. These are not easy.
Yeah.
But first of all, we cannot prescribe to someone else based on what will work for us.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
So the biggest struggle, one of the biggest struggles we have, right, like literally the whole five love languages about having positive relationships with your family members is built on this principle. And that is you have to connect with them with what matters to them. But we often connect with people based on what matters to us. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Unintentionally. Because if I really like a hug, I'm going to think you really like a hug. Not always true.
Right.
And so oftentimes what happens is we look at a person's life and we see what we can't stand about it. And so we try to force them to not stand those things when that may not matter to them. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And so the first thing is we have to figure out what motivates the person in front of us. Because I do think you can move people to bettering themselves, right? Because if you talk to somebody that's broke, they don't want to be broke, right? Like, they may continually live a life that gets them there. Maybe there's a helplessness there. But at the end of the day, they wish they had money. and so, first thing is you have to figure out what motivates them. But there's also universal things that are true in all people. And so, also starting with those, right? Like what is true in all people and then allowing that to then reveal what motivates them. And so once we know we've connected with that person with what is true in all people, learned how they tick, learn how they function, what motivates them, we can then use that to cultivate an approach that moves them towards betterment. And so I'll make it really practical. All people were made for relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Some people hate relationships because they've been burnt. Their heart has been broken. Trust is lost. But your heart can only be broken if it mattered so much that it was able to be broken. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And so that means relationships are incredibly valuable, you know? And so all people were meant for relationship. Fact. All people want to be happy. They don't like being miserable, right? They may feel like they can't get out of being miserable, but most people want to be happy. And so start there, because what you just did, the relationship gives you the permission to speak truth into a person's life.
Mm-hmm.
Asking them what it looks like to be happy starts to reveal the motivation for that person's life.
Mm-hmm.
Because what is happy is different for everyone. And that has to do with the environment. Happiness for one person might mean, I just want to be clean and sober for 30 days. That would make me happy. That's motivation. For somebody else, it may be, I want to own a rental house, right? I want to attain a college degree. Mm-hmm. I want a family that we don't kill each other. You know, I just want to be able to rent a house and know that I have the money to pay the rent and have security, right? That would make me happy. That would make me satisfied, right? And so the relationship gives you permission to be in that person's life, and that desire of what is happiness look like? Which that in itself has some weird biblical connotations, because God didn't make us to be happy. He made us to be holy. Like, I get all that. But even holy people want to be happy, Mm-hmm. Like, right? Nobody wants to be miserable. Mm-hmm. We understand God puts trials, tests in our life, and they cultivate us. They're there for a purpose, but that doesn't mean we like them. And it doesn't mean that we intentionally put ourselves in that. Because at the end of the day, like, we want to feel okay. And so that reveals motivation. Like, what matters to you? So then if I have permission to speak into your life because I have a relationship, and I also know your goals, like, what do you feel like is going to give you happiness, security in life? At that point, I can then kind of start to see how you tick and start to work. Well, then how do we get you to a better place? But so far, so often, instead of trying to figure out how do you tick and help me take who you are and get you to this place, I try to say, I don't like who you are, so how can I change who you are? Mm-hmm. That doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Because fundamentally, I don't think people change personality-wise. They can become a better version of themselves, or they can be the worst version of themselves, but they are still them.
Depending on when you start building that relationship.
What do you mean?
Like, if you get a 30-year-old in your office,
yeah,
they're pretty much signed, sealed, delivered.
Right, right.
But if you had like a...
But they could still become a better version of that or a worse version.
Right. I just meant like younger kids are more impressionable.
But also part of parenting is learning who your kids are.
Yeah.
You know, and
I guess I was thinking from the parent aspect. Like, as a parent, you can help.
You can help mold it, so hopefully they are consistently becoming the best version of themselves.
Right.
But at the end of the day, part of the job as a parent is figuring out, who are you, and how do I parent that person?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Are you the person that's very sensitive? And so I can be very calm and just be like, hey, you don't need to do that, and that's enough to break your heart, and you cult. Or are you the one that's like, no, I'm going to have to beat you senseless? And that's what teaches you. You know what I'm saying? Not really. I don't condone violence or abuse. But it's like you have to parent every child different because their personality is different. And that's one of the biggest problems that we see in parenting. You see this in education. You see this in all different facets. It's a one-track mind. Is I parent like this, get on my level, right? I lead like this, get on my level. Education looks like this, get on its level.
Mm.
I coach like this, get on my level, and it's the opposite. It needs to be the reverse of that, right? Not because, you know, because this is a problem in society, is that the people that need help are calling the shots, but leaders adapt to the needs of their people. As a parent, I have to adapt to the need of my child. It's not fair to ask a child to adapt to the adult. He's a child. The adult has to adapt to the one in need.
Hmm. That could be controversial in some areas.
It could be.
We're not going to go down that rabbit hole.
But,
and I'm not a parent. But,
and I get there may be some like exceptions to that, but that's universally true. The greatest coaches learn how to connect with every player on their unique needs.
Mm.
Universally. That is what makes great coaches. What makes great leaders are the ones that I can go hard on this person, but I go soft on this person. Right? They know how to adapt to the needs of the person in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's what, because this is what we see in freaking politics, is you see people stand on a stage and paint with a broad brush. They define large groups of people without trying to know or understand those groups of people. And they basically say, because I believe this, I'm right, and you're uneducated. And if you knew what I knew, you'd believe like I believe. And then you have people on the opposite side of the issue saying, no, you're the uneducated ones. You know, if you knew what I knew, you'd believe the way I believed. And the reality is it's all bull crap, right? Because your personality shapes how you view the world. And your personality shapes how you view the world, which then will turn into how you view politics, how you view spirituality, how you view law enforcement, how you view the workplace, how you view everything. Relationships. It's so cultivated that I could spend 20 minutes with somebody, and I can usually predict what their political leanings are going to be. Because if you go to a Republican convention, there's some personality qualities from top to bottom.
Mm-hmm.
That's not good or bad, but it just is. They go towards similar things, right? They tend to all like tradition. They don't like change. And they want a robust, politics change. But like low taxes, better capital.
Mm-hmm.
You go to a Democrat, they put a lot more focus on social welfare, caring for people, right? spreading out the funds to so that all people have access to health care and resources and things of that nature. Fundamentally, their personalities shape that view as much as the politics inform the people. Does that make sense?
Mm.
You meet a person, I can pretty much figure it out. Like, they gravitate toward what feels right to their personality. In the same way in denominations, churches, right? You go to a conservative church, and generally speaking, you have a similar group of people there, right? You go to a Methodist church or a Lutheran church or an Episcopal church, and you end up having similar people because the denomination is built around the beliefs of those personalities. We don't like to admit that. We'd like to think God informs it, and he does to a degree, but not fully. And so then what you end up having is you have the charismatics over here. Well, here's the thing. You take a charismatic person out of a charismatic church, they're still charismatic because they're charismatic by personality. And then they find a religion that amplifies that, and they all gravitate towards it, and that's what that church is more known for.
I can see vice versa.
What does that mean?
I can see where the same could be true on the other side of the 50-50. Like
environment
up,
is.
Yeah, you grew up in a charismatic church, which shaped you to be charismatic. Yeah. Just as much as you are personal, like.
But I don't think that's true.
They're hand in hand.
It's, but you were
you
born.
You can't be what you're not exposed to.
Yeah, but here's the thing: who has charismatic children? Charismatic parents.
Right. That's what
so
I'm saying.
So all it does is bring out what is true in their personality already. Here's the thing: I'm not a raise my hand, sing and shout guy. I could have been raised in a charismatic church. I'm still not a raise my hand and shout guy. I am not being stifled by going to a conservative church. I'm not being stifled in that expression. It's not within me.
Unless you were raised in that church.
I still wouldn't have been that guy.
You don't know that.
It's not my personality to be
that guy.
You
don't know
that. I do know that.
You don't know that. So I think this is where we would disagree. If I was raised in that type of environment, because, I mean, I'll share a little bit. I know we got to wrap it up, but visited a church last week.
Mm-hmm.
Very charismatic, now mm-hmm. that you brought that up. Very charismatic, very...
Did you want to sing and dance?
No, not at all. But I embraced the uncomfortability about it.
Yes.
And then when you talk to some of them, they were raised in that to where that feels comfortable.
Yeah.
Whereas somebody could say that about going to a Baptist church. A charismatic goes to a Baptist church, nobody does anything.
Yeah.
The truth and the reality is then, these people don't have the spirit. Yeah. And then the truth and the reality for me is... These people are crazy. What's happening right now?
Yeah.
In a way, and this is my biggest question right now in life, probably. They're both true to each person. Like, they're both, neither one of them's wrong because both of them are true. They in their mindset, in their worldview, in their upbringing, in their personality, what they are determining is true, and it's hard to... Mm-hmm. not see that unless you're exposed maybe or you have conversations or relationships. There's ways to, but in that moment, I don't know. I think I would disagree with you. I think we are more of a product of our environment than we realize. But that can also be products of relationships. Environment also for me includes relationships. We are our family. Yeah. We are our relationships. We are our upbringing. We are our everything. Because I don't think we become people we're not. Things that we're not exposed to is hard to...
All right, so let's land on the practical note, like we did last
practical.
Week.
Practical, all right.
So how does this need to... How can this be an encouragement or inform how we treat people?
I'll go to what we talked about last week. Create a relationship with somebody that's not like you,
mm-hmm.
that's outside of your... Because I'll be honest, the experience I had was uncomfortable, but it was very encouraging. To see and to embrace, just because something's uncomfortable doesn't make it not beneficial, doesn't make it not true, doesn't make it, just because you are uncomfortable. And so experiencing that in relationships and environments and in things, I think is good for us a little bit.
Yeah.
It helps broaden us out a little bit. And so practically speaking, I would say be open to relationships and experiences that you're not comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
Grow in that area and see what happens. And a point that you mentioned earlier that I was thinking about, I had it on my finger and then I started talking. Also kind of going off of last week when we talked about volunteering.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to church, if you're involved, if you want to serve, things like that, a reality we have to realize is everything you just described is exactly what people need, who are in need, Mm-hmm. And it takes a lot of effort and a lot of time. Mm-hmm. And as somebody who is in the Christian church or claims to be a Christian, that's a lifelong process. Yeah. It's not a, you know, when I think about it last week, you were talking about going to volunteer places. Like, it's truly a lifestyle. Like, it's going to be good to, like, go and experience some of these places.
Yeah.
But that's not going to create change. Volunteering once a month doesn't necessarily create the change that we're looking for.
It's a lifelong pattern of behavior.
Right. And so it's just a realization that this is going to take a lot of effort and a lot of time to kind of develop this and just go with it. But continue resiliency towards, like, continue that process, continue that effort. Don't give up just because you're not seeing change that you want to see.
Well, here's my practical application. One, quit trying to change people at the expense of not knowing those people. There was a quote by a guy named James Campbell, and I'm going to butcher it, but I was reminded of it recently. He said, if we say that people were made in the image of God, how arrogant is it for us to try to shape them into who we want them to be instead of seeing who God is making them? And so I think that's a big part of it that you kind of hinted at is, let's quit trying to focus on how we think people need to change and focus on how can I just connect with that person and create influence. Because you're right, this is a lifelong journey. We like to enter into a person's life for 15, 20 minutes or a couple sessions and just speak what we believe is truth and how they need to change. And then we get frustrated when they don't change. And we have to realize, listen, you know what we're battling? We're battling genetics and their environment. They are who they are because of both of those things, regardless of what percentage of each. Don't think that your drop in the bucket's the game changer, right? Not that God can't use you to set off the light bulb. But there's a good chance if you have that conversation, it sets off a light bulb. It's because there's been a whole lot of other stuff happening that you're not aware of, and you are the final piece of the puzzle. And that we have to be willing to invest in people to cultivate a relationship that leads to conversation. And care more about getting to know that person than to try to turn them into who you want them to be. And quit trying, you know, and change them in that way and focus on the relationship and becoming relevant in their life. And then also putting yourself in situations where you realize different isn't bad, even though it makes you feel uncomfortable. Different is not always bad. And stretching yourself to be comfortable in the difference in the same way you're asking them to also be comfortable in being different. We have to kind of meet them in the middle in that process. So anyway, all right, that's a wrap for today. And yeah, that's it.
Highly recommend listening to this a few times, man.
Listening to
I'm going to be honest. There was a lot of good nuggets. I'm going to go back and listen to it. There's a lot of good nuggets.
I don't believe you will.
I will.
You won't.
I will. Like, okay. If I for me to openly it. Say that on the podcast, that I means probably something? Would. Yeah.
Okay.
Like, there was just a lot of good points.
Okay.
Because we covered a lot of good topics. We started with personality, and we've ended with, like, life change over here.
Love people.
So, but highly recommend this podcast. Okay. Not just because I'm on it with Marty.
All right, guys. Until next time, y'all behave yourselves.
Holla. Thanks for joining us on another episode of TNJ. Don't forget to check out the links to any of our guests in the show description.
And check out tattoosandjesus.org for additional show information or to submit your questions, comments, or curse words.